Greetings and welcome back. This is the monthly Advisor Pact session. I'm Mark Little. We're going to deal with a couple of important issues today. And as always, we select from among the questions that we received from the members of the program to address on this session. Now, Advisor Pact, as you know, is an acronym. The acronym is kind of a metaphor for what we're going to be delivering to our ideal clients. Now, the whole point of the Advisor Pact monthly program is for advisors who have made the decision to do a whole lot more for a whole lot fewer clients and deliver what we call truly comprehensive financial services. And as a part of that, we make a pact to each and every ideal client. And PACT is an acronym standing for Protection, Attention, Coordination, and Transparency. And for those of you new to the program, this PACT, this pledge that we make to ideal clients is centered around what we call the four client expectations. These are the four things that affluent people swear they cannot find in any advisor, anywhere, at any price. It's to thoroughly coordinate all of a client's financial affairs in all areas of finance. And the five major areas of finance are financial planning, tax, money management or investment management, estate planning, and insurance. And your pledge is to coordinate all five of those areas in such a way that you will pledge protection to your client. You will keep an eye out for anything that risks the client's financial strategy or the client's financial assets. You will be the only person typically in a client's life that has ever stood up and said, I pledge to help you protect your financial strategy and help you protect your assets. I'm going to look at everything. I've got your back. As far as attention, you're going to be the only advisor in the client's life who has ever stood up and pledged that you're going to pay close enough attention to the client's financial affairs so that as things normally change in a client's situation and as the situation drifts off track, as it often does, you're going to be the individual in the client's life who's paying close enough attention to proactively recommend the required course corrections, which will be necessary for the client to remain on track to the financial objectives that they've shared with you. So you're going to hold everyone accountable, and you're going to pay close attention so that when it's necessary to make changes to get back on track, you're going to be the one that blows the whistle and makes the recommendations, you and your team. As far as coordination, you will be the only individual in the client's life, typically, who has stood up and pledged to coordinate all the financial people in a client's life and all the financial products and services in a client's life. Clients are so accustomed in our industry to finding advisors who will cherry pick what they feel like they're best at. Maybe it's just money management. Maybe it's just estate planning. Maybe it's creating a financial plan. But what clients complain about is that they can't find an advisor who will coordinate everything, that there's nothing that the client possesses, no financial assets, and no asset which is going to be earmarked for funding a future goal that the advisor will not coordinate. So your pledge is to coordinate everything relevant, every financial asset, every asset that's going to be earmarked for funding a future goal. And transparency, it's as we've talked about almost every month, it's a shame worldwide how clients truly do not know often what they're paying. They don't know what they're paying the financial people in their life typically, and they don't know what they're paying for the financial products that they possess. And that ends with you. Your pledge is full transparency. You're going to make sure that every ideal client that you have fully understands what every member of their financial team is making, and what they're paying for every financial product and services. There will no longer be any hidden fees or misunderstandings about what clients are paying for their financial products, which oftentimes there is confusion. So your pledge is to protect, to pay attention, to coordinate, and to deliver full transparency. And in that environment, you are building with the delivery of those four things, with the overarching service that you're providing, what we call truly comprehensive financial services, which means that you're going to be delivering upon, you're going to be coordinating a client's financial affairs in all areas of finance. What you are building through this Advisor Pack monthly program is what we feel is a financial services monopoly. If you will continue moving forward, implementing this model, there will be no financial advisor in your area that can compete with you. It will no longer be a decision for potential clients about choosing financial advisor A over financial advisor B. It's really you or nothing. There is no other advisor available in your community that delivers, that creates an overarching strategy for a client and then makes the pledge to deliver the advisor pact in this way. This is what clients are telling us worldwide that they want and that they can't find anywhere. So let's get to it. The two issues that we're going to talk about today is a question came in about what meetings should we record. It has to do with recording interactions with clients and potential clients, and why do we record? So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the time commitment to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. So there are three things that we're going to focus on as it relates to estimating how much time it takes to deliver the service at the level that we're talking about, which actually will please clients enough that they will share your services with everyone that they know. See, the whole objective is not, you know, the outcome is not simply to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. What we're attempting to do is to deliver comprehensive financial services at such a high level that the client will deem you as being indispensable. That's the objective. And once your ideal clients view you as being indispensable in their life, then they will take over your marketing for you. They will make sure that everyone they know and love and care about only talk to you, that they don't talk to any other financial advisor because you're the only game in town. And so the question is, if you're going to deliver not at just any level, but at that high a level, you know, how much time are we talking about? How much time should we estimate as far as the members of the team to actually deliver at that level? So, first question, you've mentioned that we should record everything. What exactly should we be recording and what should we be doing with these recordings? Okay. I'm recommending that you record all interactions and mainly for training purposes. Yes, you record client progress meetings. Yes, you record the initial client interview with a potential client. Yes, you record all your dry run prep meetings, which for those of you that are new to the program, in our process, we recommend that as a part of the three meeting process, what our process includes a brief, could call it a dress rehearsal, a week to 10 days before the actual client meeting, an internal meeting that we call the dry run prep meeting. It's 20 to 30 minutes long, and it's only staff. The clients don't attend. So yes, you record that meeting. You record every interaction. You record every potential client interaction, all phone calls, all face-to-face meetings, everything. So you record every single interaction with a client and every single interaction with a potential client, okay? So I think that I just want to go on record as saying you record everything. Now, why do we record everything? Well, it's because the best way to improve is to continually evaluate actual recordings. So the way it works is this. You record an interaction with let's say, a client or a potential client. So you listen to how you describe something. Perhaps you're trying to have a conversation with a potential client, which the objective is to lead to booking an initial client interview. You've established that a potential client is perhaps an excellent potential client. And so your goal in a given conversation, hypothetically here, is to to persuade them to book an initial client interview. So you could and should script out what you're going to say. You should have talking points in your head. You should practice in advance. Practice is a key component of improvement and mastery. But the best way to improve, so now you've scripted something out, you've practiced it, and now you've actually delivered it to an individual. By recording that, you can listen to how you describe something, but the key is you can then listen to how the individual, the ideal client or the potential client, reacts to what you're saying. And that's the key to recording. You get to hear how you say something, and you get to hear how they react to it. Now, the question is, did they react the way you expected? Did they react to get the result that you were hoping? And that's how you have to be brutally honest. And that's why, I know some people hate to listen to recordings. You hate to hear yourself on a recording. And that's understandable. That's not uncommon. But what we're saying is that the best way to improve is to listen to the recording. Because if you say something that you think is crafted perfectly, a perfect message, but then you hear how the individual reacts and their reaction is not particularly excited, and or they don't take action. You should really focus on your calls to action when you're recording interactions, and then you ask someone to do something, or you propose something, or you're trying to persuade an individual of a line of thinking that you've got. Did you get the reaction that you hoped for? And in a recording, it's very clear. You not only remember the experience, but when you listen to the recording many, many times, and I can tell you from personal experience, many times when I go back and listen to the recording, the reaction is actually different than what I thought it was in the meeting. Now, in the interaction, whether they actually, if it's a call to action, whether they took the action or not. In this hypothetical, whether they agreed to schedule an initial client interview or not. So what actually happened. What I'm talking about is something a little bit different, and it's way more nuanced, and it has to do with listening to their actual reaction. You'll hear all kinds of things on a recording. You'll hear yourself over-talking people. You'll hear individuals ask you questions, and then as you listen to the recording, you realize you never answered the question. You'll hear how someone's talking and you cut them off and don't let them finish their question, or you anticipate a question by cutting someone off, perhaps, and then only to realize that you're answering a question they weren't asking. You're answering a different question. You'll find all kinds of things on these recordings as far as ways to improve. So I'm just saying that the best way to improve is to continually evaluate actual recordings. You keep what works best, and you change or drop or eliminate what doesn't work at all. It doesn't work well. And so this is the fastest way to dial in your messaging. You sit down, you craft out what you think will work best in terms of messaging. You script it out, you create talking points, you practice it over and over and over. Now, this is behavior most advisors are unwilling to do, but this is the process of mastery. Then you deliver your best, and you record it, and you evaluate the recording, and this is the best way to improve and to get the results that you're looking for. I will also add, not only is this the best way to improve, it's the quickest way to improve. So if your goal is to improve your results, to accelerate your results as quickly as possible, then I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is the only way to do it. Now, from time to time, I share with you things from the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. And I realize in the Advisor Pack monthly program, you don't have access to the toolkit. But one of our promises to you when you joined the Advisor Pack monthly program was to share with you things from the toolkit when they're appropriate. In other words, things that we do on the toolkit with the members of the toolkit that might help you here. And so what you're looking at here is when an individual joins the toolkit, they are allowed to submit recordings on certain things, client meetings, dry run prep meetings, and so forth. But we request that they provide us with a self-coaching form of the recording. Now, the only reason I'm showing this to you is I think you should come up with your own self-coaching form. All right? And from this form, I just want to point out a couple of things. And I would recommend that you do this with every recording, that you sit down and you actually document after listening to the recording or while you're listening to the recording, but mainly at the end. You know, take notes during the recording of your reactions of areas of improvement. And then, but be sure for every recording to have the mindset of establishing here's what went well in this recording and here's what definitely I feel needs improvement. So try to create kind of a bottom line for every recording. And force a discipline on yourself to look for what really worked well. And your point in identifying what worked well is to memorialize it, to make sure that that messaging that went really well, that you've got that documented for use in the future, that because that worked well. And whatever you feel like needs improvement, you've now flagged. I don't care how excellent you think you scripted that section out, if it did not go well or if you feel it's an area that needs improvement, document that. Make it your goal to edit, change, or delete that whole section of your messaging because you've identified an area that needs improvement. Now, it may not be the actual wording. I can tell you from my own experience that sometimes it's my way of being. Like I've identified things that, for example, my energy level was too low. I listen to the recording and I'm thinking, what? I sound like I'm sleep deprived. I mean, I have very low energy. So you may notice that something about the way you're saying something is not the way you want it, and that's what needs improvement. You may also notice things like I mentioned before, that you're cutting people off, or you're not answering the question, or you're saying things that are distracting, like ums and ahs. Like I've listened to recordings of myself, and I've heard that I say, you know, and you know, too much, you know. So, you know, it's very distracting. So you can and should identify everything that needs improvement. And again, this is the best way to improve, and it's the quickest way to improve. So develop a coach self-coaching form. Most financial advisors are unwilling to make this effort to record interactions and to go back and listen to them, which is why most financial advisors think they're better than they are. Listen, I'm in the catbird seat. I'm listening to recordings of financial advisors all the time. And I can tell you, when I first start working with a financial advisor, the greatest sin that I identify is overconfidence. You know, that an advisor, obviously, and most advisors that join the toolkit are excellent advisors. They are highly skilled. Generally, they're very, very experienced. Many advisors that we work with have been in the business for more than 20 years. And so they're very good at what they do by the time they join the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. So when I'm listening to recordings, it's of very successful advisors. Nevertheless, most of these advisors have never recorded meetings. They've never listened to recordings of meetings. And I'm just going to say it. They are overconfident in terms of their ability to communicate. And by listening to recordings, you don't even need a lot of coaching from someone like me. Although getting coaching you know, going out and getting coaching is really important. I would say the most successful advisors, I would say the most successful people in any profession, sports, CEOs of corporations, you know, the most successful people have coaches. So it's helpful, obviously, to have an outsider who's skilled listening and helping you improve. But I'm telling you, recording and listening to your own recordings, self-evaluating is really valuable. You can improve. This is the best way to improve, and this is the quickest way to improve, even if you don't have a coach. You will be able to, if you're open-minded, you'll be able to listen to these recordings and just listen to how people react to what you say. Listen especially to recordings where you did not get the results that you were seeking, and you'll find either behaviors that you've got that you were not aware of, or you'll find what I would call sloppy communication, areas where you didn't realize it, but you're communicating in a way that's unclear at times. And you'll find ways to better describe, and then you'll find ways to better describe what you're trying to accomplish, depending upon the purpose of the meeting. The best advisors know that the only way to hone and refine messages is to listen to how actual people, actual ideal clients, actual potential ideal potential clients react to a message. The only way to really refine your message, the only way to improve, the only way to really accelerate your results is to listen to how people are reacting to what you're actually saying. And that is the reason that we record. So I just want to talk for a minute about this idea of accelerating results. So what do you actually do with the recordings? Because I've seen that as well. I've seen advisors that have the discipline to record every interaction, and you know, they've gotten the hardware necessary to record phone calls. They've got recording devices in the meetings that, with full disclosure and with scripting, to explain to a client and a potential client why there's a recorder sitting on the table, and so forth. I know advisors that, and even with interactions, face-to-face interactions with potential clients in casual locations, like you bump into someone at a charitable board meeting or a backyard barbecue or a cocktail party, and you're chatting with someone, and it shifts to business. I know advisors that have worked out, you know, found the phone apps on their phones to record these conversations, even surreptitiously. But the point is, I've known advisors who've gone to the trouble and the discipline to actually record every interaction, who then don't go back and actually listen to them. So I'm going to recommend, as far as an action item today, that you not only commit to recording every interaction, every meeting with a client, every meeting with a potential client, every phone call, every even casual conversation with a potential client in an out-of-office setting. You figure out how to record all these things, but it won't do you any good unless you block time right now to go listen to these recordings. You listen to the and then as far as client progress meetings. So if you're recording every client progress meeting, the question has come up before, Mark, do you listen to these recordings? I mean, once you've got a client and you've now you're conducting routine client progress meetings and you're recording these meetings, is it for training purposes at that point? Or is it only for archival purposes now that you've disclosed to an existing client that you record everything? And I would say no. I listen to every recording of every client meeting, and I do it as part of my routine meeting preparation. I listen to the previous client progress meeting. So I always book 2 hours to prepare for an upcoming client progress meeting. I invest that time, roughly 1 hour, reviewing all the documents that and analysis and reports and everything that's been prepared for this upcoming client progress meeting. I invest about an hour going through all of that before the dry run prep meeting with my team, my internal meeting with my team. I also invest another hour listening to the recording of the previous client progress meeting. And I pick up on tons of things that I kind of forgot about, or I didn't realize at the time how important it was to the client. This is often the first time I've listened to the actual recording. I, of course, was in the meeting, but this is the first time I'm listening to the recording. It's 4 months later while I'm preparing for the dry run prep meeting for the next meeting. I'll listen to the recording and I'll pick up on things that I didn't realize that the client had so much interest in, or something that was so important to a client that I just somehow, didn't really gauge properly the importance of an issue. But by listening to the recording, I catch it. So yes, listen to the previous client progress meeting as a part of your routine meeting preparation. Listen to the previous meeting. And listen closely to how, as I said, individuals react to your message. But really focus on your calls to action. So when you ask someone to do something, listen especially to how you phrase your request, how you phrase your call to action, and then very closely listen to how they react. And you should, whenever you have recordings of really, really successful meetings or interactions, when the individual reacted favorably and took action on your call to action, things like that, then flag those recordings. Oftentimes, I will transcribe those. At the very least, I will create scripting from those sections of the recording that were the most successful, and you know, things that I want to remember to say that exact same way every time. You have an opportunity with the recording to document what worked well. Now, this idea of recording, we can't leave this topic without talking about, is it legal? And, you know, you'll have to talk to your attorney. You'll have to talk to your compliance people. But be prepared. They're going to warn you not to do this. Now, let me tell you how I handled this. We lived where I was. There were certain laws around recording people and when I was acquiring clients. And my compliance department had mixed emotions about this. They, on the one hand, liked the fact that there was a record of things that I did say, but they were concerned early on that I was documenting things that, could be used later. Now, I just ignored all that. I thought, you know, this is for training purposes only. So if I'm recording an interaction with a potential client and I'm the only one listening to it, and I'm not going to use it for archival purposes, I'm not going to use it and I'm not going to save it for the future. I'm just going to record it. I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to listen to how the potential client reacted to what I'm saying. If it went well, I'm going to document it for future use and create a scripting. If it did not work, I'm going to make notes on what never to do again, and then I'm going to delete the recording. So I just thought this is a personal integrity issue. I'm going to use it for my own training purposes, and so I just, you know, I did it because I felt it was in the best interest of my clients to improve my messaging. All right. Now, for ideal clients, it's a little bit different. It's for training purposes and archival purposes. So when you record a client meeting or you record a client phone call, you're recording, yes, to improve, so for training purposes, but you're also recording these, I call it, for archival purposes. It's for, you know, for the record. So you've always got it. You could always go back and listen to it, but you're for your team. So for example, not every member of your team is actually in a client progress meeting. And when I'm in the meeting, I'm so focused on the clients, I don't create an interaction log, which is a specific method and format that we recommend that interactions be documented using a specific format that we teach. And it's one of the monthly projects. If you haven't already gotten it, you will, as far as learning how to create the interaction log. So I am too busy in the client meeting to create the interaction log. So I use the recording for my administrative manager to listen to the meeting and create the interaction log, which then that interaction log becomes a permanent part of the file, and we keep it for archival purposes. But the recording itself can be listened to by other members of the team, so I think it's for both purposes. Now, it's easier with Ideal Clients because you can place notifications everywhere. When you send out every email in your signature, down below your signature, it can say, you know, we record every interaction. You can place it on your website that whenever in meetings and phone calls, we often record interactions for training purposes. When you have, you know, some people have music on hold or messages on hold when people are on hold on your office phone, you can put the notification that you record everything on that messaging. It just is a quick notification. You can put it on the footers of appropriate documents. So when we have, for example, documents that we hand to clients in meetings, if it's, you have an opportunity on documents to place the notification that on phone calls and in meetings, we do record interactions for training purposes. You know, you can place a notification for after you've interacted with somebody a first time. You've sent them an email, you've sent them to your website. You have an opportunity to notify individuals that you are recording. So I as far as the legality of it, I'll leave the legality to the lawyers and to the compliance people. I can tell you for potential clients, it was a personal integrity issue. I felt like it was in the best interest of my clients and potential clients to improve my messaging. So I recorded and I destroyed the recordings after I documented my scripting and you did it for my own training purposes. As far as Ideal Clients, and anybody you've interacted with, even potential clients, once you've sent them an email, you have an opportunity to notify them that you do record pretty much everything. All interactions may be recorded for training purposes. So, you know, put whatever disclosure you need to so that, after you've interacted with any individual, a potential client or an ideal client, they at least know that this is a possibility that you could be I feel like if I'm disclosing it everywhere on my email, my website, my on hold message in footers of documents occasionally that are handed to people in meetings, I feel like in these notifications that I've created awareness that is a culture in our business. We record primarily for training purposes, and that's just the issue. My call to action to you is make it work. If your interest is in the best way to improve, and the most and the quickest way to improve, the fastest way to dial in what you're saying so you get the results that you need and that are in the best interest of your potential clients and your clients, then make it work. Figure out a way to record everything, because without these recordings, your improvement will be crippled. Okay, we have a question. How many hours does it take to deliver truly comprehensive financial services per client? I'm estimating around 8 hours per ideal client per year. Does that sound about right? Well, no, but I'll walk through it. Let me just say that there are three things that I'm going to focus on in addressing this question. There are three, I guess you could call them individuals, that we're going to focus on. It's the trusted advisor. How much time does it take the trusted advisor per client per year to deliver truly comprehensive financial services? Then the subject matter experts who are actually doing the work. How much time does it take a subject matter expert per client per year to deliver truly comprehensive financial services? And then your administrative manager who directly supports you and who coordinates the team of subject matter experts, at least in our model. You have an administrative manager so that you don't have to do the administrative support work of truly comprehensive financial services. So how much time does it take that individual working and supporting you and coordinating the team? How much time does it take them to deliver truly comprehensive financial services per client per year? Okay, let's start with the trusted advisor's time. You said it takes about 8 hours per year is what you're estimating. What I'm going to say is just the trusted advisors meeting preparation time alone, like just preparing for meetings, is close to that estimate. So for meeting preparation, it actually works out to about 7 hours per client per year for client progress meeting preparation, or we call it prep. And that includes the dry run prep meeting. So a week to 10 days before every client progress meeting, you know, we have an internal meeting. The client's not present. It's 20 to 30 minutes long. It's kind of a little short dress rehearsal with a focused agenda to prepare for the meeting. We call it the dry run prep meeting. So it works out to about 7 hours per client per year. The way it works out is, if you kind of break it down, it's 2 hours of trusted advisor preparation per client progress meeting. It's an hour. Roughly, the way it works for me is it's about an hour reviewing the documents and the analysis and the reports that have actually been prepared for the meeting. I want to look at that and prepare myself before a dry run prep meeting. So I'll invest about an hour before the dry run prep meeting reviewing everything. That's the documents. And then I'll invest another hour listening to the recording from the past client progress meeting. So that's 2 hours prep for me as the advisor per client progress meeting. And then there, then the meeting, the dry run prep meeting itself, which is part of prep, is 20 minutes long, let's say, on average. Okay, so that's 2 hours and 20 minutes. And then in our process, we have a 3-meeting process. So you're meeting with the client 3 times a year. You're meeting with a client once every 4 months, 3 times a year. So that's 2 hours and 20 minutes, 3 times a year. There's the 7 hours per client per year. That's meeting prep only, and that's for only for the trusted advisor. Okay, so there's 7 hours per ideal client per year. But the total time for a trusted advisor is estimated to be around 14 hours. When I look back, and we study this with advisors that are actually on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, which is a different service that we offer, but it's very high-end advisors that are implementing truly comprehensive financial services for their clients. Our tracking shows that the average time invested by a trusted advisor per ideal client per year is around 14 hours. Now, let's say you have an ideal client community of 50 ideal clients. That would work out to 14 hours per client per year. If you had 50 clients, that's just under 18 weeks per year. So let me just kind of walk you through it here. 2 hours of meeting prep before the dry run prep meeting. 1 hour to listen to the last recording and 1 hour to review all the documents and the reports and everything that's been prepared for the client meeting. So that's the trusted advisor investing 2 hours of meeting prep. Then the actual dry run prep meeting is 20 to 30 minutes long. And the meeting itself with the client is 90 minutes. All right. So where does that number come from? The actual meeting with the client is 90 minutes. Well, again, let me shift over. I kind of grab things off the Trusted Advisor Toolkit to share in the Advisor Pack Monthly program, only if I think it'll help you make the point, help make the point of what I'm trying to share. I don't mind giving you a complete, you know, pulling back of the curtains and let you see the toolkit and the way we teach things on the toolkit. So I'll walk through this 90-minute client progress meeting in a minute. But the point is, it's a total of 4 hours per client progress meeting. So, you know, 2 hours meeting prep, 2.5 hours, including the dry run prep meeting, and then 4 hours when you include the actual client meeting, and you're calling that 90 minutes for the actual client meeting. Okay, so that's 4 hours. That's 4 hours so far per client per year, or per meeting cycle. Sorry about that. So it's 4 hours per client progress meeting. Now, let me switch for just a second and say, where do we come up with that 90 minutes? The discipline that we teach is that you should target as a discipline for you as the advisor. This is for you to discipline your communication skills. You should practice completing the client progress meeting in 60 minutes. Now, I know I said 90 minutes. I'll get to that in a minute. But for the actual client progress meeting to serve the client and deliver truly comprehensive financial services, we recommend that you practice getting all this in under 60 minutes. So now we've all had clients that like to go off on tangents and they like to talk about their grandchildren and the recent trip to Europe or the recent fishing trip, or they want to talk about the sports team or the weather or whatever. So the reason I'm saying this here is it really is, to the extent that you do as we recommend and that you work on, you kind of make it a lifelong journey for you to work on your communication skills and your skills at getting things back on track. Like, how do you handle it when a client tries to pull you off track? How do you politely put those issues in a parking lot, say, we'll deal with that towards the end of the meeting, but let me kind of get back to what we're talking about here. And to what extent is your skill to keep things on track? So we recommend that you try to get everything in 60 minutes, and you will be able to do that. We recommend a 2-minute opening routine, a 10-minute progress report. Many advisors spend a lot more time than 10 minutes kind of reviewing the numbers of what has happened with the client's financial affairs since the last meeting. But we kind of have a 3-step process in the way we teach it on the toolkit. So you should be investing 10 minutes kind of giving the client a progress report about what's happened since the last meeting, moving them towards their financial objectives, and what's happened with their money since the last meeting. Then we have the focus. That's the routine portion of the meeting. Then the focus portion of the meeting is comprised. It's a 45-minute section, 15-minute. We have a meeting exercise where we're getting information out of the client's brain, information that only they possess but will help our team. So we have a 15-minute meeting exercise. We have a 15-minute, what we call the highest priority conversation. So it's a timed exercise. We have our team suggest to the trusted advisor, what's the most important conversation that we need to have with this client at this meeting that will help the client either accelerate their results or eliminate some kind of obstacle? And so that's the highest priority conversation. Again, it's a skill. How do you do this as a timed exercise? How do you move through it for 15 minutes and then close down that conversation and move on to the next? And then 15 minutes for what we call the greatest probability strategy, step-by-step implementation plan of action. That's just another way of saying we invest 15 minutes going through the action items that have to be accomplished between now and the next meeting. So that's a 45-minute section. We call that the focus portion of the meeting. Then there's a 3-minute closing routine. That's 60 minutes. If you add all that up, it's a 60-minute client progress meeting. And I can tell you, in working with advisors for nearly 15 years now, if you work at this, you can get these meetings to where you get, it's a high quality meeting. You know, some of these advisors that we work with, you know, are charging clients $50,000 per year, you know, so, you know, divide 50,000 per year by 3. I mean, if we have 3 meetings per year, I mean, this meeting, the client is paying a lot for this meeting. So it really falls to the advisor to create an extraordinary client experience. And I'm telling you, if you work at it and make it your objective, record the meetings, listen to the recordings, hone and refine your message, stay on task to this agenda, this timeline, you can deliver an extraordinary client experience in 60 minutes. Okay. So all I'm saying is that 60 minutes for the meeting, and then see here where it says transition now to the referral conversation. So we do suggest that you allow 30 minutes to, I call it the referral conversation. It's really an assessment of how much this client values you. So to what extent does this client consider you to be indispensable? So the conversation shifts from serving them to a conversation about, in essence, how indispensable do they consider you to be? And if they consider you to be indispensable, then it will become a section of the meeting where you talk about, you know, the people that they want to introduce you to, you know, that they are happy to introduce you to. If you are not indispensable to the client, then a portion of that meeting after the client progress meeting is to discuss you know, what do I need to do? You know, what you need to do to become indispensable to this client. So the point is, it's 90 minutes. We also recommend that you pad the meeting and put an extra 30 minutes in there so that you're booking on your calendar 2 hours, but it should never take over. On average, it'll never take over 90 minutes. Only in a situation where the client's got some really, you know, critical issue that they're dealing with, will it go over this amount. But if you block 90 minutes for the 60 minutes for the client progress meeting, 30 minutes for referrals, you'll get it done in 90 minutes. We only recommend that you put the extra 30 minutes in there because if something does come up, do you really want to shut a client's conversation down if your next appointment has arrived and you kind of have to move on? I never wanted that pressure. So I booked 2 hours for the meeting. It takes about 90 minutes and that's that. So that's how we come to the 14 hours per client per year. All right. So all that roundabout way to get to this, it's 12 hours per client per year devoted to client progress meetings. Okay. So that's 4 hours per client progress meeting, 3 times a year. There's 3 client progress meetings. That's 12 hours per client per year devoted to the client progress meetings. That's both preparation and the meeting itself. And then 2 hours per client per year devoted to individual attention outside of client progress meetings. So we all know that clients, you know, call up with issues. Sometimes it's a crisis. Sometimes it's a fun opportunity. You know, they somebody just called them out of the blue and offered to buy their business, or maybe, you know, just out of the blue, their corporation offered them millions of dollars to retire early. Or maybe somebody died in their family, or maybe it's maybe there's a health issue. You know, who knows? But I think we all know that that there are issues that come up with clients that you just, it's outside of the normal meeting routine, and you need to, it's either handholding or custom advice that you need to provide. We recommend that you guesstimate 2 hours per client per year. It's always worked out for me. If I put that in, it always works. And some clients need almost none of that. And then some clients need twice as that much, but it averages out. So that's where we're getting the 14 hours per client per year for the trusted advisor. All right. So that's the trusted advisor's time. Let's say you had, hypothetically, with this 14 hours per client per year, let's say you had 50 ideal clients, just to pick a hypothetical number and say you get to the point. I don't even know what your goal is as far as the number of ideal clients that you want to acquire. But let's say at some point you have a community of 50 ideal clients. Then basically, you're going to be spending about a third of your time serving ideal clients, and two-thirds of your time you can use for whatever you want. I mean, it's other business activities. Right now, it's probably client acquisition. I actually recommend, because you don't have 50 ideal clients right now, I really recommend that you invest 80% of your time out of the office, you know, face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients. I mean, that's the only way you're really going to build your ideal client community, is interacting with potential clients. But I'm saying, even after you have 50 ideal clients, 14 hours per client per year, you know, that's about a third of your time. It works out to be 18 weeks per year you'll be serving clients. That's the 14 hours per ideal client per year, both preparation and in client meetings, and serving them above and beyond with special issues that they've got. And that leaves you 34 weeks a year to do whatever. I mean, really, I mean, if you've built your community of clients and you're getting the revenue that you need to live your life, you could take 34 weeks a year off. But the point is, 14 hours per client per year, all in, you know, it's about a third of the year to actually serve the clients. Okay, so that's you. Now let's talk about subject matter experts. It's a little bit different for each subject matter expert. We've estimated this. It's broad averages across the world. I'm just going to throw these numbers out here because this is the average that we've seen. I can tell you that our team does not invest quite this many hours. My team of subject matter experts doesn't take quite this much time. But I'll just throw this out there because this is these are the numbers that as we've tracked them over the years, this is what they've reported. To deliver truly comprehensive financial services. Now, this is in the toolkit where we have 143 deliverables checkpoints assigned to the five subject matter experts, the financial planner, the tax, the money manager, the estate planner, and the insurance subject matter expert. We have these 143 deliverables checkpoints, which represent truly comprehensive financial services on the toolkit. So how long does it take each one of them to complete those and to attend the dry run prep meetings and, you know, interact with each other and collaborate because we're a team environment. So the financial planner is, it averages out that a financial planner, it takes them about 12 hours and 43 minutes a year. Okay. That's for the financial planner. They have the biggest job because they're kind of coordinating the entire team as well as a team captain, because every area of financial services touches financial planning. The tax expert, on average, invests about 8 hours. That's one full day per client per year. Okay. The estate planning subject matter expert, it averages out to about 7 hours and 17 minutes per client per year. The money manager, 7 hours and 7 minutes per client per year. The insurance expert, 6 hours and 48 minutes per client per year. So it's between 7 and 8 hours per client per year. You could just average it up to 8 hours, you know, per client per year, except for the financial planner, which is about a day and a half. Okay. So a full day per client per year for everybody, roughly, except for the financial planner, it's a little bit more. And by the way, this includes their administrative support people. So the financial planner has a paraplanner or someone crunching numbers for them, entering data into the financial planning software. This includes those hours. The tax expert has a bookkeeper or some junior accountant reviewing tax returns, creating tax projections, etc. This includes their time, both the tax accountant, the subject matter expert, and their support person or people. The estate planning attorney, if they have a they should have a paralegal. We recommend you don't accept or invite any subject matter expert onto your team unless they have support people, because it will manage your costs. The reality is that the routine work needs to be done, not but you know, it goes to the whole theory. Why pay someone $100 an hour when you can hire someone at $10 an hour to do the same work? It doesn't make sense. So you want to always hire subject matter experts that have administrative support people that bill at a lower rate for their hours. So the estate planning attorney will have a paralegal or someone reviewing wills and trusts. Money manager, same by the same token, they have people that place trades and administrative support people in the money management area. Insurance, again, administrative support people actually reading the insurance policies and so forth. So my point is that the administrative support hours for each of these roles are included and embedded in these hours estimates, these estimates of hours. Let's just use the tax subject matter expert as an example to walk through some hypothetical numbers for you. Let's say in your area, a tax planning subject matter expert, an accountant, let's say, really highly skilled tax subject matter expert in your market, typically bills out at $400 per hour. And they have, let's say, a bookkeeper or a junior accountant, somebody on their team that does the grunt work, and they bill for their support people's time at $50 per hour. Just hypothetically. By the way, roughly right, this is about what it is in my market. The accountant bills at $300 or $400 per hour typically, and they bill their bookkeeper or their support people at a you know something around $50 an hour. That's roughly right where I am. I'm in San Diego, California. Since we estimate tax planning subject matter expert to invest 8 hours per client per year, let's just make an assumption here. Let's say half of that time is spent with the subject matter expert actually reviewing the final work, and 4 hours is the administrative support people or the bookkeeper, whoever, creating the tax projection, you know, the support, half the time is the support people actually doing the work, and half the time is the actual subject matter expert reviewing the work, all right? Which is, let's just assume. So the 4 hours at $400 per hour, that means your subject matter expert's going to be estimated per year at $1,600 based on this estimate, this hypothetical. Their support person is going to be billed out at $200 per year, per client per year on average. That works out. That means in an average year that this team would bill you $1,800 per client per year for truly comprehensive financial services. So now the question is, what do you actually pay them? So we recommend that you, and this goes beyond the scope of what we're talking about here, but in the deliverables team recruitment process, we recommend that you negotiate a flat fee. So let's say it would be $1,800 if they billed their normal hourly rate. I would open negotiations at a flat fee of $1,500 per client per year. Why should it be lower? It's very, very business, you know, a logical business reason. It's because they are investing no effort for marketing. You know, the reality is that tax accountant does not bill $400 for 40 hours every week. No, they have billable hours for the time that they're actually working, and then there's downtime where they're doing other things in their business, including client acquisition. So they've got to go out and get their own clients, but in this case, you're just handing clients over to them, okay? So you've got a tax subject matter expert who has to invest. They don't have to lift a single finger to acquire this client that you're bringing, you know, to their, you know, you're laying at their feet. So it makes sense, and it's from a business standpoint, you would definitely not bill full price if they're not having to go out, they're not having to pad their, I say pad, they're not having to increase their hourly rate to account for all these hours that they invest acquiring clients. So it makes, you know, you might even open negotiations at a little less than $1,500 flat fee. And you would make the point, you're not having to invest any time to acquire these clients. I know during the course of the normal week, you invest some time going out and finding clients or dealing with referrals or whatever they do to build their business. And they don't have to do that in your case. So you open negotiations at a $1,500 flat fee, and you just try to negotiate some kind of a flat fee as opposed to an hourly rate. Okay, so that's just a hypothetical example. Now let's talk about the administrative manager. We've talked about the trusted advisor. We've talked about the subject matter expert. Trusted advisor is, you know, 14 hours per client per year on average. Subject matter experts are 8 hours per client per year on average, except for the financial planner is 12 hours, a little over 12 hours. Now the administrative manager who supports the trusted advisor and coordinates the team. How much time do they invest? Well, after a period of time where the administrative manager gets up to speed, a skilled administrative manager will invest 4 hours per client progress meeting on average. So you're meeting with a client 3 times a year. So to prepare, to get the team to deliver and prepare properly for that, for each client progress meeting, it's going to require about 4 hours of the administrative manager's time. Now, it's not evenly spread over the 4 months. So you have 4 months in between client progress meetings if you have 3 meetings a year. It's not like an hour per month. It's actually front, it's, what would you call it? Backloaded. It's backloaded to the weeks leading up to the client progress meeting. There's about an hour. If again, I'm kind of describing the way it is if you're on the tool, if you're an advisor on the toolkit and you're an administrative manager that we're working with as a member of the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, which is the only data I've got. So I kind of have to share what we're doing over on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. But an administrative manager will, on our process, will gear up for a client progress meeting about 60 days before the client progress meeting, and they'll invest about an hour creating a 60-day notification, touching base with the subject matter experts, making sure they have everything they need to prepare for the meeting, making sure that they are aware the meeting is coming up, and to make sure they don't wait to the last minute to start working on this meeting. So they just start, you know, 60 days before a meeting, they'll invest about an hour just circulate, you know, working with all the subject matter experts to start getting them focused on this upcoming meeting. Then before the dry run prep meeting, there's a big flurry of activity where the administrative manager is receiving all the documents from the subject matter experts for the meeting, you know, for the dry run prep meeting. And the administrative manager is doing quality control checks, making sure that everything turned in from the subject matter experts is up to the standards. Basically, it's the administrative manager's job to make sure that everything that should be done is getting done. And so there's about 3 hours leading up to the actual client progress meeting, right? You know, I would say the 3 weeks before the client progress meeting, you know, there's 3 hours compressed into that period. So I would say on top of that, considering that some of an administrative manager's time over and above these client progress meetings is kind of miscellaneous administrative work in the office, things that you have to do in the office, as well as putting out fires for ideal clients. So a client calls in and they've got some high priority situation, and maybe putting out fires isn't the best way to describe it, but it's basically drop everything and serve a client. So we know there is, in addition to just routine client progress meetings, there's ordinary, routine, miscellaneous office administration, as well as these extra hours that an administrative manager has to invest with ideal clients, you know, just whenever they need the time. So if it's 4 hours for the routine meetings, if you add 2 hours for office administration and putting out fires, whatever, then you can estimate for an administrative manager, 6 hours per client progress meeting. All right. And we have 3 meetings per year. So that's 18 hours per ideal client per year on average. So the question is, for an administrative manager, how much time does it take to invest to deliver truly comprehensive financial services? It's you can assume 18 hours per ideal client per year. Now, this does not include non-ideal clients. So again, if you had a hypothetical community of 50 ideal clients, that ends up being 23 weeks per year. So going back and looking at the 52 weeks per year, if you had 50 ideal clients and your administrative manager were investing that amount of time, truly comprehensive financial services, there would be 23 weeks per year invested, focused on your ideal clients. I call it serving your ideal clients. And then, you know, 29 weeks per year, more than half of the year, is available for other business activities. Unfortunately, and I say unfortunately just because of my own personal prejudice and perspective, this is consumed by serving non-ideal clients. And with that, I just will end on that. It goes back to the 80-20 rule. If it is true, and I encourage all of you to go through this exercise, if it is true that your ideal clients, let's say the 80-20 rule would say this, forget your ideal clients just for a minute. The 80-20 rule says that, you know, 20% of your clients generate roughly 80% of your revenue. If that's true, and it's whatever it is in your business, maybe it's 30% of the clients represent 70% of the revenue. Maybe it's 10% of your clients represent, you know, 90% of your revenue. Whatever the ratio is irrelevant. It's the concept of the 80-20 rule that I want you to think about here. If 20% of your clients are driving 80% of your revenue, that means that 80% of your clients are driving only 20% of your revenue. So this whole idea of devoting 55% or 29 weeks per year, an administrative manager supporting and serving a group of non-ideal clients, which drive, you know, a minority of the revenue in the firm, like maybe 20% or less, it just doesn't make sense to me. That's why I always recommend you can do with this whatever you want. Your administrative manager can invest that time doing whatever you want. What I would recommend that you do is to make sure that your administrative manager is focusing less and less time on non-ideal clients. Ultimately, if you could eliminate your non-ideal clients, it would only have a, you know, theoretically a 20% impact on your revenue. You could always add one ideal client and take out all that revenue probably and simplify your business and figure and use that time to figure out how to serve your ideal clients even better. So you could even potentially increase your fees. But the other is legacy processes. One thing you have to keep an eye on with administrative managers is they tend to get wedded to the status quo, and you need to lead your team, and with your administrative manager, make sure that you're continually questioning why we do things the way we do things. If the answer is it's because we've always done it this way, or we've got a process which the main office requires, whatever, challenge those continually. Try to streamline, try to simplify, try to challenge the status quo, and you will find that if you invest that 55% of the year not on non-ideal clients, not on legacy processes, which are maybe unnecessary, but really focused on adding value to ideal clients and making it to where your ideal clients consider you to be indispensable. How could you use this time, this other business activity time, both for you and your administrative manager, not on unproductive things, but on things that actually could, you know, add dramatically to your revenue? By becoming more indispensable to your ideal clients themselves are willing to pay more, and you could, in our case, we got to a point where you could increase your fees 10 times by really focusing on that opportunity cost of that time that you're spending on other business activities. If you could instead focus it on how could we be providing more value and increase our fees tenfold? That's the challenge. And it's a fun question to delve into. It's time consuming, but it's worth the effort because the payoff is in revenue. Well, that's it for this month's monthly advisor packed session. We wish you all the best in implementing. And as always, I'm Mark Little. We'll see you next month.